the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23.
I'm Ann Thomas. I'm here with Rick Vespa and Jim Morris of English Gardens. And on this show, Rick, we're going to talk about the nuts and bolts of landscaping.
Right, Ann. Landscaping is a process, and there's steps you need to go through, depending on the level of landscaping you're going to do. Small redos or small projects versus a large landscape design build project. It's all a process, and we can help you with that.
And Jim, you've got some great advice for us.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of things to share, and looking forward to the conversation.
We'll get started right after these messages. Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and this show features a roundtable on landscaping with Rick Vespa, president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Jim Morris, the director of landscape and holiday decorating services. It's great to have you both on the show.
Thank you. Ann.
I want to start out with you first of all, Rick, because you have a pretty incredible story about your connection to English Gardens. You basically grew up in the business.
Right. When I was a young kid, my dad and I used to go to the store with my dad, and we would be there sometimes on school nights and stuff like that. We'd regularly have our meals at the store. I literally grew up in the retail business at English Gardens.
And what kind of experience did you eventually get? You probably, number one, went to school for this, and number two, did everything in the business.
Well, that's a long story, but to try to keep it short, I wanted to be an architect when I was a kid, and as I was going through high school and getting advice, I ended up at Michigan State University in landscape architecture school. And what I was trying to do is bridge the gap between horticulture and architecture. And it was kind of a good idea, except for I kind of lost a little luster in the getting the landscape architecture degree. And my dad actually encouraged me to get more business background. So I had a lot of credits in landscape architecture and horticulture, but I ended up getting my business degree.
Oh, that's interesting. So you've been in this business with this business for a really long time.
Right. Like, you know, as we said, I grew up in the business. My dad and my uncle were the founders of the business. Now we have seven second generation families that run the business. But the interesting part of the story is that for many, many years, when I was growing up in the business, I worked in the store waiting on customers, diagnosing their plant problems, trying to find plants for them. We grew the business on selection, and a lot of that selection came from customers walking in the door and asking for things, and we would source them. And over time, we built our selection that way. So anyway, over the years, people would come in recognizing us as the expert in plants and flowers and the gardening and landscaping, but we didn't do landscaping. So gradually, I don't know what year it was, we started to do some landscaping as a high school student. I'd go out in a truck with my uncle, and we did some landscape installation. At nothing like what we do today, which is a full design build concept, but we started the landscape business then.
So you really did kind of end up doing what you always wanted to do and loved.
In a way, yes. I do a lot of things, wear a lot of hats for English Gardens, but I do love the landscape business, and what Jim and the team accomplished there is fun to watch and help guide.
Absolutely. Now, Jim Morris, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get into this business?
I went to Michigan State I went there undecided. And through some trials and tribulations, I took some landscape architecture classes and really enjoyed the design aspect of things. But I didn't like the really grand scale. So my advisor kind of said, hey, why don't you try out the horticulture program? And then they have an emphasis in design. And it's really tailored towards just becoming a landscape designer, not anything like a landscape architect.
Sure.
So that was kind of how I found my way. And then I worked at a wholesale nursery right out of school. And a year later, I moved back to Metro Detroit because my first job was in Lansing. And then that's when I started working for English Gardens in 1995.
So you've been with English Gardens for a very long time.
Yes, indeed.
Wow. So let's start out first and just kind of explain to our listeners, when we talk about landscaping, what do we mean?
I mean, landscaping is the planting of plants in a arrangement that is targeted for aesthetic beauty, functionality. You know, there's many facets to landscape and landscape design. So the first thing is really what does the customer slash, you know, homeowner want? What do they want to achieve? Is it functional? Is it aesthetic? Or a combination of the both? So I kind of have to sort through the needs and the wants and then come up with a design intent. Once you have your intent, that kind of helps guide you through the entire design process.
Would it be fair to say that you can do landscaping on a small scale?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you don't have to go big right away. You can kind of start small and add on as you go.
Yeah. You know, for instance, that's kind of how my mom started. She started with a plot that was probably 3x3 growing some roses. And then from that, it grew and grew and grew. And now she actually only has about a 3x3 swath of grass, and everything else is all plants. So that was kind of also me getting into horticulture was watching her do that, and the way that our backyard transformed over the years and really enjoying all the colors and the transformations and all these new plants that she was bringing home all the time.
Well, my experience with this is you can kind of get addicted to it because you start in one area and you see how beautiful your yard looks, and then you think to yourself, oh, I better get busy over on this side of the house too. Is that what you see a lot with your customers?
Our customers are a little different in that regard when it comes to the design build end. These are typically people that don't want to do it themselves. They're not really true avid gardeners. They're more people that want to look out their window and go, wow, that is beautiful. And then they want to go out to their patio and enjoy the scenery, you know, maybe have a cocktail or have a meal out there. And those are the kinds of spaces that we build in the landscape operation.
So how do you do this? How does this start? You sit down, you meet with a customer, and you give advice, or the customer tells you what they want?
It is a total collaboration. If it weren't a collaboration, we'd probably run into a lot of problems that way. It is really asking the right questions of the customer to really drill down to find out what they want, what they need, and then once we find the wants and the needs, then we're able to create a plan based on that. But it's their property, it's their experience. If we were just to go there and say, this is what you need, this is what you want, it wouldn't be a win-win for either of us.
So do you start with like a plan slash blueprint for the customer?
Yes. Well, not right out of the gate. We do a lot of site analysis. We take measurements. We shoot grades. We figure out sunshade patterns based on canopy. We figure out if there's going to be wind or anything else to impact the yard or the project. And then we go through and we do what is called a functional use diagram. So we define our spaces. We want travel patterns. We want focal points. We want screening if we want. Or one of the coolest techniques you can do if you have a little bit of space in your yard, and again, it depends on where you live, but if you can steal some vistas from your neighbors and capture those through the design process, it's always fun to do that, to be able just to, if there's a beautiful tree in the background, you can accent that. So once you do all that preliminary work, then we go back and we put things on paper.
So one of the benefits to using English Gardens for landscaping, it would seem to me, would be the placement of where you put bushes, where you put flowers, and, you know, different areas of the yard. Because if you try to do it yourself, you could end up with an absolute disaster because of the sunshade plants. Am I right about that, Rick?
Yes, and I want to qualify something here. You know, in our stores, we provide service, advice on plant selection.
Sure.
And, you know, if you're trying to do smaller areas, We can guide you, you know, but in most cases, just by going into the department in the store, whether it be the nursery, perennials, annuals. Those are for smaller gardening projects. And we have pretty much daily advice on that. What we're talking about here is really either a renovation of an existing landscape or actually a full new landscape. And there's a whole process to get there. And one of the things I like to say, I heard as you were asking questions about the smaller plots and adding to it, we like to think of things in the latter, in the renovations or the plan, or the full design build, a master plan. Whether it's all done at once or it's done in phases, it can be done either way. But a master plan makes sure everything is cohesive when you're done.
And that goes to this issue of making sure that everything is in the right place and it will grow based on the sun shade lines and things like that.
Exactly. That's why the site analysis initially is so important. And Jim will talk more about placement of plants and allowing for future growth, which is also very important.
Let's take a quick break, and we will get into that, Jim, and talk a little bit more about just exactly how to do this plan and do it properly. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens on 760 WJR. We do want you to know that this weekend, all patio furniture is 40% off, plus English Gardens is offering free delivery. That's a pretty good deal. So you want to stop in and visit English Gardens this weekend. We'll be back right after these messages.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
And I'm here with Rick Vespa, president of English Gardens Landscape Company. Rick, during the break, we were talking a little bit about landscaping. And you've got people that come to English Gardens and they want to do some landscaping. They might not even realize how much landscaping they want to do. They just know that they want to change the design in their yards. How do you help them?
So it starts with a lot of questions, you know, and a lot of listening. Ask the customer what they're trying to achieve, whether it's just replacing a few plants or maybe changing a small area. It might be something you could just give them verbal advice. Sometimes we ask people to bring in pictures or a small sketch of an area, and we can guide them right in the store. But oftentimes people will come in, and after we talk, when we listen, we hear things like, you know, they want to put retention walls in, or they want to put a walkway in, or they have a drainage issue. Big water always wins. Drainage is a big issue with landscaping and homeownership. If you have poor drainage, your house can be damaged from that. So when they come in with those kinds of projects, we start thinking it's time to send them to our landscape company for professional service. And that's where Jim takes over.
So, Jim, take over from here. Now they're in front of you.
Yep.
What do you say to them? How do you help them?
Basically, we'll go out to their home. That consultation, it's a free consultation. And we want to get our eyes on the project, make sure that it's something that we understand, that the customer understands what they're asking of us. So that way we kind of have a mutual agreement as to, you know, what's going to be done at their home. And at the end of that appointment, if both parties agree, we collect a design fee. And that design fee can start at $500, and it could go up depending on really the size and the scope of the landscape project that they're looking at. Typically, like a front renovation of their yard would probably be like a $700 design fee, something like that. And that fee is rebated back to them if they have us do the service for them. So, it's basically a down payment for them. And then, basically, about two weeks after that initial appointment, we'll come on out again to their home and or bring them out to our office, to our conference room, and present them with our ideas. Again, this is all based on all of the questions and answers that we've gone through, the site analysis, and the designer will come up with a two-scale plan with the color rendering. Most of the time, we'll do a little perspective for them. So the difference between just the two-dimension plan, it's going to be circles in space on a piece of paper. When you get into your perspectives, you give a little bit of background knowledge to it. You'll see the house. You'll see kind of sizes of the plants, the trees, and everything, just to give some scale. So most people don't understand, or it's really hard to understand a blueprint plan, which is just in two-dimension. Bringing it up into three-dimension and understanding the spatial relationships between the plants, the size differentials, all the different layers of size, from your ground covers to your medium to your specimens and ornamentals and shade trees. So we're dealing with a lot of three-dimensionality that on a piece of paper is just a circle in space. So walking the customer through that, getting them to understand that, it usually takes probably about an hour of the customer's time as well as the designer's time.
Now, once the customer decides, yes, we want to do this, we love this design, we're ready to go, what happens next?
We present them at that same time with a proposal. So they'll be pricing based on what we present them. And if they say go for it, we sign contracts and we'll put them into our queue of landscape jobs that we have, and we'll get them on our schedule board and start making progress.
And you provide all of the product for them?
Yes. This would be a whole turnkey operation. From the soil to the fertilizers to the plants to, if they're interested in hardscapes, we'll do hardscapes, softscapes, all that. Yes.
Now, Rick, you mentioned drainage, and I know here in Michigan, drainage is a big deal. We've been dealing with a lot of rough weather. It's rained a lot. It rains a lot in the spring around here. Is that a challenge in the landscape business in Michigan?
Always a challenge. From the plant material thriving to the hardscapes staying intact. Driveways and walkways can be damaged by improper drainage, and the foundation of your house, needless to say, can be damaged by poor drainage. And in some cases, there are runoff requirements by cities and municipalities that have to be dealt with. So, yes, water is a big deal, and proper grading of a yard and landscape project is always very key.
So when somebody comes in and they want to do a big project, they do need to know that this drainage issue is probably one of the first things that needs to be tackled in order to have a beautiful landscape design.
Jim mentioned the site analysis. When we go in, we look at things like the exposure, wind, sun, all that stuff. But we also look at the infrastructure of the site or of the house. Electrical service, gas lines, sewer lines, and most important in this discussion, the downspouts and where all the water from the house goes and from the walkways or any hardscape.
What about soil quality? Do you also have to really examine that in different parts of Metro Detroit?
Soil quality is always really difficult, especially in the Metro Detroit area. We deal with a lot of clay.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, there's probably fewer nice soil projects than dealing with the clay. So we provide the proper soil amendments, but the trick to that also is if you were to look at anything off the internet as far as a planting specification, they're going to tell you to dig out twice the size of the plant container or root ball and backfill with all this beautiful great organic material. It's going to be soft and fluffy. Well, in our yards in Michigan and clay, it just creates actually a little bathtub for it. So it's always a challenge. We try not to do that. The hardest part is for that newly planted plant to get out of that beautiful subsoil that we've just put in there and then get into that hard clay. So we do our best to minimize the effects, and we fertilize properly, and we give them all the starter fertilizer that they need to be successful.
And I see Rick shaking his head in complete agreement and smiling at you, Jim.
First of all, because there's so much detail to what Jim's trying to describe, you know, it's about amending the soil. You don't plant, you know, a bucket full of peat moss. You have to use some of the existing soil and some other things we'll recommend to create that bridge zone for the roots of the plants to go from the planting hole, if you will, into the existing soil. And so you don't want to have this, you know, really good soil and then really bad soil next to it. Plus, as he said, it'll hold water. But I wanted to say one other thing. I live on a sand dune.
Oh,
and
wow.
So in Michigan, the soils vary. And the difference is, the key to be clear, with clay soil, you have no drainage. There's no
percolation
through the soil. When water hits the ground, it just runs. So it's going to run wherever the grade takes it. In my house on sand, I have a lot of great percolation. I still have my drainage handled properly, but it's a different animal altogether. So not all of Metro Detroit is clay, just to be clear.
This is great advice for anybody who wants to landscape. Whether you're an amateur landscaper or you want to get into a big project, you better be thinking about water and soil. Let's take a quick break, and we're going to continue this conversation in just a few minutes. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. Has arrived, and that means it's time to start thinking about getting the yard ready for summer. And that may mean some changes in the landscaping. I'm here now with Rick Vespa, president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Jim Morris, the director of landscape and holiday decorating services. And first of all, Rick, I want to start with you. What are some of the hot trends right now in landscaping that you are noticing here at English Gardens?
I think two of the top ones come to mind are screening, whether it be of, you know, a close neighbor or something like that, a privacy from other people's decks and patios, or an unsightly view of some sort, maybe a building in the background, or anyway, screening of all kinds is really a hot topic right now. And then the other thing is the outdoor room, creating spaces that are sort of like another room from the house. And that's probably, something most people are looking for today.
And did screening become hot because so many people were sitting home in their backyard during the pandemic? Is that when it started, are you thinking?
I don't think it started then. It's always been in demand, but the demand definitely went up.
You know what I love about that, though? I didn't even know what that term meant until I asked you during the break. But I love that you can use landscaping to kind of block the views and give yourself some privacy. So what type of landscaping are you using for screening?
Really, it's a combination of plant materials. Slender-growing plants typically provide nice screening because of their branching patterns and or they are an evergreen. We don't recommend just going through and planting a whole fence line of arborvitae. That is not the best solution as a long-term solution because for some reason, the one in the middle ends up dying. And then you go to replace it, and it's shorter, it's got a little bit different texture, and it just doesn't line up. And then the one next three over might die, you know, a couple years down the line. So then you're always battling this kind of gap-tooth smile appearance of the landscape.
And don't forget, too, it's not the best aesthetic solution either, just to have a straight line of something. That never looks the best. There's ways of handling screening on a property line, for instance, that can be much more aesthetically pleasing.
That's interesting. So would you use different kinds of bushes, plants, trees for
that? Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. So again, just depending on the parameters of your property, it really plays into it. But using a combination of deciduous material, which is stuff that the leaves fall off, or the evergreens, so they have constant foliage on them, using them in conjunction, varying size, That way you can kind of get into using your design principles. You have some a little bit of variety. You're able to repeat elements through. And those are all key design principles that we as professionals use to be able to create the most aesthetically pleasing solution to the problem at hand, which is I don't want to see a neighbor. I don't want to see the trash cans. I don't want to see that building. So there's just lots of different ways to achieve that.
Okay, I got to ask this because this drives me crazy in my neighborhood. The deer. The deer here in Metro Detroit, they have the potential to destroy all of your beautiful work. So how do you guys deal with that?
The number one thing is the communication from homeowner to designer. They have to make the designer aware so that then there's a fighting chance that we can pick the right material. There are plants that are less deer susceptible, but in a, depending on the season, depending on the year, they may try nibbles of this and nibbles of that. And some years they like a plant like right down to the nubs, and then other years they don't touch it. So it's always really difficult. The best thing to think of are coarse textures, things that might have thorns. Those just on the deer, it hurts their mouth, so they don't want to eat it.
Over the years, I've learned that horticulture is part art and part science.
Yes.
And so I often talk to people in the store, and I'll say, oh, use this. And they'll say, oh, no, they still ate that plant. And so it just goes to, if they need to eat, they're going to find something they like. And there are things they prefer, some things they stay away from. But if they're real hungry, they'll eat them. By the way, in our stores, we have huge department for animal repellents. It's one of the biggest categories of our garden pharmacy. And those products work. They require some reapplication, that kind of thing, and timing. But that is an option for people that have animal problems because, as I just said, nothing is guaranteed as far as plant selection. We do have a list in the store of deer-resistant plants as well.
Oh, that's helpful.
Again, no guarantees, though.
Because they change their appetite from year to year,
depending
right?
Depending on what's available.
And that's probably the same with the repellent, too, because for a long time, we used that product, Repelzol.
Yep.
And it worked. It worked for a couple of years. Well, then I think they kind of got used to it. And so now we're finding that we have to use something different.
Yeah, now we're on garden pharmacy topic, but I'll just say this. Those products require timing and reapplication.
Especially around the rain, right?
Right. And then, or sprinklers. And then the other thing is changing them out so the animals don't get used to a certain smell or whatever the repellent properties are of a given repellent that you use. So you change them out, they don't get used to it.
Oh, that's really good advice. Now let's talk a little bit about creating an outdoor room. I love the way Rick talks about having an outdoor room. Just give a little bit of advice to our listeners about that. If they've decided that they want to extend a little bit, how do they do it?
It all comes to the planning, but it's very similar to interior planning. You know, you need a floor, you need a ceiling, you need walls. Those can all be achieved through different means. You can have gravel patios, you can have brick paver patios, you can use concrete. You could really even use sod or turf is your foundation for that. It just depends, what you want to achieve from the aesthetics. And that's where, having a plan and having a design to start you off, that really helps. The ceiling can be created through like pergola structures or umbrellas or, just a canopy of a tree that you can use as your ceiling. And then the walls are, there's varying heights. You can have a knee wall, you can have a full wall. So and that's just plant selection and framing of the space.
Do you also take the Michigan weather into consideration, too? Because obviously when it's really crummy in the winter, we can't use that room.
Yes. Yeah. Short answer, yes.
So let's take a quick break. But before we take the break, Rick, I know you've got this fabulous deal right now on patio furniture. Tell us about it. 40% off?
Right. 40% off all patio furniture. and patio furniture sets, I should say. We also pay your sales tax through the 16th of the month, and we'll deliver free delivery, assembly, and setup. And if you want, we'll haul away the old furniture.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great to know. So that's until tomorrow, through the 16th, right?
Yep.
Okay. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
I'm here with Rick Vespa, president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Jim Morris, the director of Landscape and Holiday Decorating Services. And Rick, I want to start with you. There are some very important points that you want to make with regard to a landscape plan. Two very important things that people need to think about when they're going to re-landscape their home.
It's kind of an infrastructure thing, and we talked about that earlier, but if you have an existing sprinkler system, it should most likely be modified for your new landscape.
Great idea.
Yeah. And really important. And it can just make things easier for you. You're going to get better results from the plants, from the lawn areas. It's just the right thing to do. And if you don't have one, we almost always recommend a sprinkler system with our landscape installations. And then the other thing is drainage. And we mentioned that earlier in the program as well, that drainage is key, getting it done right, because water always wins. Plants will thrive. Your hardscapes will stay intact, and your house will do better with good drainage. And we always recommend dealing with that up front, not later on.
Yes. So with regard to the irrigation system, it's maybe a little bit more costly at the beginning of the project, but if you're not properly watering the entire landscape, you could end up having a real problem on your hand, right?
Absolutely. You know, the plant's performance really... they need water in order to grow and thrive. And people aren't as dedicated as they think they are at the beginning of the project,
right,
to get out
busy
there.
And...
yeah, and in the middle of the summer, all of a sudden you go on a two-week vacation or a week vacation or even the weekend. You go way up north for the weekend. Who's going to water those new plants?
Exactly.
So the irrigation system is a great substitute waterer for that. It'll take care of it for you. It just really, really helps ensure that the plants are going to thrive.
So we've been talking about creating an outdoor room. So now we've got everything all set up. You've got your beautiful landscaping in. Let's talk a little bit about, I love your quote, the interior decorating of the back room, the outside room, Rick. So what are some of the things that we need to think about once the actual landscape plan and some of the beautiful bushes and the grass and the trellises once they're in?
Well, things like patio furniture, for one, always a great start. Pots and flowers in those pots. You know, you can choose a color palette both with the pot and as well as the plants you choose for that. Outdoor decor, lights and...
we didn't talk about lighting.
Yeah,
Lighting's important too, right?
Fire and water features can be added before in the landscape or actually after as a smaller feature within the outdoor room. Wall hangings, statuary, fountains. You can do cute little water gardening in a pot, actually. Build a small water garden in a pot. What am I forgetting, Jim?
I think you covered most of them. I mean, it's just all about accessorizing and making the space yours. Wall hangings, art... those are always just really nice touches. And then the lighting, whether it's dedicated landscape lighting or it's even, like holiday lights or, just string lights hung up above, always just add a really nice ambiance. Some people call them fairy lights or twinkle lights.
Sure.
All those, anything just to illuminate the space, to give you a little bit more time outside to enjoy it, especially in the summer months. You can really take advantage of that.
And you've got to kind of pay attention, though, to what you're putting out there with regard to the scent you know, because you don't want something out there that is going to be a problem with regard to the scent. And you've talked a little bit about the fact that that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's so scent is such a important sense, and we try to take that into account when we're doing our plans. There are some beautiful smelling, like lilacs or like a fragrant viburnum, and those are all very sweet and perfumey type scents. But then you have to be aware, like, ooh, we better stay away from like cocoa mulch. Cocoa mulch can be very overpowering. Some people really like it's a very fine texture to it, but when first installed, it's past a chocolate bar. It's really tough. But over time, it does dissipate. But you have to be aware of that when you're putting it in.
And don't you also have organic mulches that can be problematic too?
Yes, yeah, so some of the organic mulches just from composting or decomposing can be rather aromatic, not the right way. So, interesting, I hadn't thought of this earlier, but most of the time those natural mulches tend to turn gray once they weather. And that's an interesting feature of landscaping that we like to see some of the finer, more processed mulches or even the dyed mulches, which are okay. They're not chemically a problem. Those retain their color longer and make the landscape look better for a longer period of time.
Well, that's good to know. So how often do you need to replace your mulch or redo it?
We recommend a top dressing on an annual basis. Over time, you can start to build up mulch that you'll want to actually remove some of the older hardwood, some of the thicker, chunkier stuff. You'll want to get that out of there. But just a real fine top dressing, like an inch to 2 inches, depending on how young or old the landscape is. So
when you're laying your mulch, do you have to be careful how you lay it around a tree? Because, you know, you see some people, they put it up right up to the tree and they kind of build. You're both smiling.
Yeah, mulch volcanoes.
Yes, that's exactly right.
You see them all over town.
It looks kind of good, though, Jim.
I don't know about that. yes, it's very important for plant health that you don't put product right up onto the bark of the plants. So you'll actually end up with disease and pest issues if you do put pile up mulch up onto the plant bark.
So how do you judge that? You just keep it away from the actual base of the tree or the bushes?
You can go, you know, up to about a half inch, maybe even less than like a quarter of an inch. But you just don't want to pile it up onto the plant.
You taper it down at the collar, where you get to the roots or the trunk of the tree. Taper it down to nothing at that point. Your mulch can build up from there, but you don't want a mulch volcano on the trunk of the tree.
Because it could destroy the tree.
Yeah, more of a saucer approach. So you have a couple inches out from the plant, you can have like a little ring, and that'll actually help divert water to the root zone of the plants as well.
And the other thing you want our listeners to know about, Jim, is don't overwater. I mean, you can actually hurt your landscaping by overwatering, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's about knowing, and you know, for our customers, we educate them and we let them know, you know, the water requirements for the plants that they'll have in their landscape. But it's really easy to overlove overcare for your plants, and that's probably, I would say, over half of our warranty issues are basically water oriented. It's either too much or too little, and it's a difficult balance sometimes. So.
And speaking of warranties, it's about a year.
Yes, we have a 1 year warranty on anything that we install.
And we do want our listeners to know that all patio furniture is 40% off until through tomorrow at English Gardens. English Gardens pays the sales tax, right, Rick?
Correct.
And also free delivery and setup, and you'll even take away the old furniture, which is awesome. That's a great deal.
Great time to buy.
Absolutely. I'd like to say thank you to you, Rick Vespa, the president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and you, Jim Morris, the director of landscape and holiday decorating services. You guys are awesome. You have been very, very helpful.
Thank you, Ann. We appreciate it.
It was nice to meet both of you. You've been listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend.